All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the annual report work group meeting for the fiscal year 2024 cycle. I am Seth Pazinski with the HHS Assistant Secretary for Technology Policy, and I'll be serving as your designated federal officer for today's call. Just a reminder to the work group members that all of our meetings are open to the public and public feedback is welcome throughout. Members of the public can either type in their comments in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting, and also have the opportunity to make verbal comments at the end of our agenda today. We'll have a designated public comment period. So I am going to start off with a roll call. So I'm going to call your name. If you can please indicate that you are present, and I'm going to start with our co-chair, Madel Briggs Melanson.
Present, and good morning, everyone.
Thank you. Did get a message that Eliel Oliveira would not be able to join us today. Hans Butendijk.
Good morning.
Afternoon. Good morning. Thank you. Hannah Galvin.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jim Jurgis. Anna McAllister. Shiloh Blen. Sarah DeSilvi. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, Steve. Kiki Loma Ashukantan.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Rochelle Prosser.
Good morning.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And now I'm going to turn it over to Madel for her opening remarks.
Great. Thank you so much, Seth. And just want to say thank you to the entire annual report work group. I really appreciate all of the comments that came directly into ASTP about the illustrative stories, as well as any other revisions. And today we're going to have a great day actually going over the draft report. And this is going to be the time for all of us to provide our input and then also any additional revisions before we meet with the committee as a whole next week in Washington, D.C. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. In addition to what I just mentioned, we're going to go over quickly the update on our work group plans. We are going to discuss the draft high-tech annual report for fiscal year 24, and then we'll open it up for public comment and then adjourn. Next slide, Excel. Great, next slide. So this is our overall meeting schedule. So you see that we are almost, wow, 3/4 done with all of our meetings. It's amazing how time goes by so quickly. And so today we're really going to focus on reviewing the first draft of the annual report. And then after next week's high-tech meeting, we'll come back and we'll also update that draft in order to prepare it for high-tech final review and approval in preparation for the November-December 2024 transmittal process. Next slide. This is a meeting schedule for the full high-tech committee. So we will all be in Washington, D.C., the majority of us, some of us virtually, next week, and which we're going to present this draft annual report to the larger committee in order to receive their feedback. And then on November 7th, during our high-tech committee meeting, we will review it one last time and also vote for its approval. So this meeting today is incredibly critical in order to gain everyone's perspectives and thoughts about this report. Next slide. In terms of the development, we as the work group, we're going to complete the illustrative story ideas and discuss the draft report today. As I've mentioned, we will present this draft report to high-tech next week when we're all in DC. After any additional edits, the high-tech will vote to approve the report and it will be transmitted to the national coordinator in November 2024. After that point in time, ASTP is going to forward the final report to the HHS Secretary and Congress and also post it on healthit.gov. I'm going to drop a little pearl right now. Given all the amazing work that the annual report work group has done to prepare this report, and you'll see the draft in a moment, this is also a time for us to use our own channels also to advertise this annual report. So we'll speak more about that later on in the next week or so. Next slide. All right, so discussion of the draft high-tech annual report. And so let's go ahead and we are going to, is there any other next slide for this? To talk about the division, our new target area? Or is that in, okay, That's okay. So, Excel, if we can bring up the high-tech annual report draft for us to start to review. So, we have some incredibly exciting news, and this all came directly from the recommendations and the expertise of the and just yes, the PDF is just fine, whichever one is best to view. And if we can make it a little bit larger, thank you. So what we're going to do is go over the draft, and you all will see that this is already a pre-formatted draft of the final report. As was mentioned earlier in some of our initial meetings, one of the things that ASTP has really been focused on, especially with Michelle's guidance and leadership and the rest of her team that works with her, is to make this annual report more visual, to make this annual report more concise, so that it can truly help to inform people of all levels, whether that is within, of course, Congress and the government, but also those that are outside of Congress and government. So, really wanted to modernize it to 2024. So, you'll see some of those changes right now. Next slide. And so this is the initial table of contents. And this is the first official page of the annual report, and which it goes over all of the various different sections that are going to be included in the annual report. So a foreword about high-tech target areas in the Cures Act, the health IT infrastructure landscape. And you may notice that there is a new target area that we're going to discuss in a moment, which is the use of artificial intelligence that improves health and healthcare. And once again, that came directly from all of your feedback, all of your recommendations, that given the emerging landscape of artificial intelligence, we really need to bring it out as its own target area. And so you'll see some of those changes in the annual report. This then goes over the next five target areas. Also, it summarizes all of the high-tech progress in fiscal year 2024, and then it concludes with the appendix. Next page. So this is a bit of the foreword, which is the introduction to the annual report, which gives a high-level overview of all that high-tech has been doing in terms of our activities, as well as our many recommendations. Next slide. And this also goes and provides more information about high tech. And you'll see that again, the layout here is much cleaner, more streamlined, has a lot of various different visuals for those that like to read, but also those that like to look at images. And this gives an overview of our history at its high tech since its initiation and also from this year. Next slide. Now, these are the primary high-tech target areas in the Cures Act. And so the Cures Act initially started with four different target areas. Earlier, was it last year or the year before, we added the design and use of technologies that advance health equity. And now we are adding the new target area officially to high-tech, which is the use of artificial intelligence that improves health and healthcare. And the summary of this target area is applying this emerging health IT by providers, patients, and other interested parties safely, securely, and fairly to achieve better health outcomes. And this is because we know that AI is now part of all that we do in health IT, and it's really important that we have a focus on this. So thank you to all the annual report work group members who highlighted and amplified that this really needs to be its own separate target area. ASTP, as well as Mickey Tripathi, Kathy agreed with that. And so that's why we have it as our new target area. And you'll see the rest of the format as we move on. So congratulations on we having six target areas. All right, next slide. So this just gives a bit of the health IT infrastructure landscape, which goes over some of the different aspects that have been occurring this past year, and also some of the history, once again, of high tech and what we tr are trying to obtain, not only in fiscal year 24, but also going into fiscal year 25. Next slide. And this is the area that I'll first stop on just to see if there's any questions, because after this slide, we're going to get more into each one of the different target areas. So once again, this is a summary of all the various different target areas and topics. And what's really nice, I feel, about this page is that you have the target areas and it highlights each one of the topics that we're going to go into in terms of the next portion of the crosswalk. So for instance, for use of artificial intelligence that improves health and healthcare. We have the use of AI in health and healthcare, provider use of AI in health and healthcare, and then impact on patients by the use of AI in health and healthcare. So really helps to define those areas. When it comes to designing use of technologies that advance health equity, implementing health equity by design, use of technologies that support public health, optimizing public health data exchange and infrastructure, interoperability. This is a huge area with many different topics this year. As well as shows privacy and security, where it says privacy and security of health data, lack of disclosure, accountability, transparency in use of de-identified data, and then patient access to information. So PGHD, as well as reducing patient burden. So I want to pause here to see if there's any thoughts or comments so far, because then we're going to get into each one of the target areas, the illustrative stories, as well as the crosswalk and the write-up. So any comments so far on this new design, as well as our new target area?
Now I'm driving, so I limited on raising the hand. I think it looks beautiful. It's very well laid out, easy to read, easy to understand. So congratulations, really love it.
Thank you so much, Rochelle. I appreciate your comments. Yes, I agree. I think the team did an amazing job. Wonderful. And there's one other comment that came in also from Ike that just shows the progress that we have made as well regarding the infrastructure. And so that's really nice that we can clearly show how we continue to expand some of our recommendations, some of the areas that we think are also very pertinent to the current and the future state of health IT in this country. So thank you all for that.
Madel, I don't know if you can, this is Anna. I don't know if you can see my hand raised. Oh,
now I can see it. Yes, please, Anna. I have
to follow the rules this time.
Thank you. I can actually now see everyone's hand. Sorry, I was on a different view. So thank you. Go ahead, Anna.
One question that I have, when you, I mean, and this slide helps, but when you first listed the target areas from the Cures Act, you'd noted that we'd added artificial intelligence. Was that part of the Cures Act, or are we now just adding things to, is it like the Cures Act plus things that we think are important? And one of the areas that I wanted to ask if that were the case that we highlight under is like reducing patient burden. And I can see in this slide that you've actually got that as a sub bullet, but from a procedural matter, I'm just curious.
So that's a great question. And I'll also have Seth chime in. Underneath the CURES Act originally had four. So it started off with use of technologies that support public health, interoperability. Actually, it may have had three, excuse me. Right, Seth? It was three initially?
Correct. Yeah, the interoperability, privacy, mm-hmm. and security, and the patient access to information are the three priority target areas that were the original three.
Correct. Thank you, Seth. But what occurs is that in the Cures Act, it states that we as HITECH, of course, in collaboration with ASTP ONC, if there are new areas that emerge that we think are critical to this work, that those can be recommended. And Seth, so we have added as HITECH over the years, three additional target areas and topics based off of what is going on in our country and in terms of thinking about what's best for HITECH to focus on and provide recommendations. And Seth, love for you to, any other comments about that?
Yeah, so Congress and the Cures Act laid out, as you mentioned, the three, which were kind of like the place to start of interoperability, privacy, security, and patient access to information. And then they allowed for the HITECH in consultation with ASTP to identify additional target areas. And so in past years, HITECH has added the health equity and public health target areas. And then this would be the latest addition assuming, you know, or ultimately depending on HITECH approving the report at the November HITECH meeting.
Thank you. I think that's helpful. And it's, I mean, the two sub bullets that you've added to patient access to information are my two like really important areas. Not the only ones, but like two very important areas. So thank you for that. I really appreciate your calling those out. And thank I really you. Like the graphics too.
Thank you, Anna. And again, when we go, remember those two topics under patient access to information are already part of our report and our full crosswalk. This is just trying to provide a summary, a high level summary for people reading the report. So yes, very important. I see your hand. I'm sorry I missed it initially. I was on a single view versus the gallery view.
No worries at all. Now, my question about the progress in infrastructure was more along the lines that we called attention to progress in that place, in that location, but we didn't identify progress towards what about infrastructure. So that may be something we want to provide just a little clarity on. Secondly, the graphics are terribly impressive. I do hope that there's going to be similar effort in helping improve navigability of information for individuals that cannot see the beautiful graphics and are using screen readers or other technology to help navigate and understand the annual report.
Yes. And so let me answer your most recent question, and then we'll go back to what you're referring to in terms of infrastructure. Yes, absolutely. This will be transformed to make sure that it is 508, meets all the 508 requirements that has already been discussed, because we want to make sure that this is a report that is highly inclusive to absolutely everyone and that everyone can take in all of the information. So that has already been discussed. That's already in progress. So thank you so much for bringing that up. And now, Ike, when you were saying the infrastructure, which infrastructure, was that on a previous page?
Okay, I'll be back up to that. First slide on infrastructure is mostly text. It's about three slides up. That one. It's that one.
This one.
Uh-huh. For the left-hand column, it says assessment of progress. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't say progress towards what within this system. There should be some kind of goal.
Absolutely. Do you have any, I clearly see what you're referring to. Any thoughts about that? Don't want to put you on the spot, but yes. So yes,
I don't have an immediate answer, but there should be some kind of target, right?
Agreed. And so maybe all of us, especially after going through the draft report, we can circle back to this. That's a really good call out because it's progress towards what? You're absolutely right. That's right now maybe a little too empty. And we should say progress towards greater interoperability, which is accessible to all or whatever that may be. We need to,
Or assessment of the infrastructure. Either way works. But if you're going to, but from my perspective, if you're going to say progress, you need to be able to say what you're working to.
Exactly.
Or you never know when you're there.
Right. 100%. And we also have a recommendation of progress towards achieving the goals in our on each one of our target areas, you know, just to try to wrap that in. So we'll work on that. That's a very good call out. Thank you so much for that. Okay. Well, any other comments? I can see everyone's hands now. All right. Well, if there's no other comments, let's keep on going through the report. The very next page is an overview of all the federal activities across the target areas. Now, this is actually a special page, which is once again in response to our conversations during our last annual report work group meeting. So one of the discussions we were having was the fact that some of the recommendations that we are providing as the annual report / HITECH, we know that there's other federal activities going on in these various different target areas. And so we really wanted to make sure to try to call that out to say, while we as HITECH are providing these recommendations, we know that this is also a priority in several other areas as well. So other agencies are doing this. Our ASTP is also working on some things that are similar. So we want this work to be complementary. And so what the team did was create this, which gave a high-level overview of many of the other activities that are going on throughout HHS agencies and beyond that do complement some of our recommendations. So therefore, there is an asterisk when we go into the various different topics in each target area. And that asterisk that you can see at the bottom of the left column says the HITECH recognizes that it is important to align the work, its work with significant initiatives already underway at HHS that address certain topics to some degree. These topics are indicated with an asterisk in the following pages. And so these will also be hyperlinks so that people can actually click directly on any of these federal activities to learn more about it. And so you'll see how this plays out and is formatted in the upcoming pages. Ike, I see your hand.
Yeah, really quickly. I think it would be good to include at least in the text block on the left, if not the descriptors or any of the activities, a recognition that the federal activities are implemented in conjunction with state, local, territorial, et cetera, and the private sector, that it's not federal activities operating in a vacuum, that it's really a collaborative effort across the board.
Great addition there, absolutely. So it's not like it's just, for instance, yes, within the agencies, but there's lots of partnerships underway. Great. Thank you for that, Ike. All right. Any other thoughts about this? Okay, let's keep on going then. So the very first section is use of artificial intelligence that improves health and healthcare. And so on each one of the various different initial target areas, you'll see a list of the key topics that it's going to review, as well as the introduction to that topic. And so there's a lot in this report. We can't read it all during this meeting, but I at least just want to walk you all through it so you can see the format, but also if anything comes out at you or you had any comments from doing your pre-reading, we can also discuss that. And if you haven't had a chance to go through this draft report yet, I really, really urge you to do so ASAP, and we'll talk about when the revisions are needed, because we do want to incorporate your feedback, your thoughts before the report goes to HITECH in a couple of days. So that's one thing that's really critical, and we'll speak a little bit more about those steps. Ike, yes, you have a question?
On the topics, we've talked about provider use of AI, impact on patient. How do we change the language here so that patients are a little more engaged and patient-centered as actors from a driving perspective, not a being driven perspective?
So one thing that we can think of is, and I understand what you're saying in terms of the impact on patients, but it's really more patient use. It's kind of bi-directional, right? Because we have patients' use of AI and how they interact with the technology, as well as clinical decision support and other types of technology that is being used in the various different clinical settings. And so maybe once we get there, let's think about how we can potentially word that. And when we get to that section, because this is one directional, but I also think that our recommendations for this was a little bit more thinking about the safety and the ethical and equitable use of AI in the clinical decision arena. But let's take a look at that.
Absolutely. My point is that if we're talking more broadly about patient-centered and patient-driven, mm-hmm. and want patients engaged in their healthcare, if we start using language that reflects all the way through with patient engagement as actors and drivers, rather than things being done to patients mm-hmm. or things for patients.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And that's why I fully understand your point in every single way. And that's why I want us to take a look at that section.
Yeah.
so that we can make sure to align it with the right framing and wording that may be needed.
Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. Anna?
I just wanted to concur with Ike, and thank you, Ike, for raising that. I wasn't quite sure where to raise it, but yeah, there's a whole patients use AI movement that mm-hmm. I'm part of. I'm not the leader of it, but you know, a lot of us are using AI to kind of iterate our way, or ChatGPT, or especially to iterate our way through different questions and things that are very difficult to get answered through traditional healthcare setting. I mean, that's outside of the clinical setting, but it certainly interacts with the clinical setting. In addition, in the diabetes community, there's a lot of use of AI, or at least algorithmic-based support, as well as the use of the customized LLMs or LLMs drawing from specific databases that are, you know, validated peer-reviewed information about diabetes that are being driven and developed by patients, but certainly could be integrated within the clinical setting. So I just want to say it's an important point. Thank you, Ike, for raising it. And it's I'm never quite sure how this works with ASTP, because I feel like the focus of the organization and the agency is just what's happening in the clinic. In the clinical setting with providers. So a lot of the stuff is done, you know, I mean, patients are kind of like what we did in the type 1 community, are kind of hacking our way through the system to do things that are completely outside of the healthcare system, but you know, kind of adjacent to and integrated into it in different ways. So never quite sure how that fits within the remit of ONC/ASTP.
Yeah, so all very important points. And remember, this is our report. So this topic has actually been here for several weeks, almost into months. So if this is not landing right, let's take a look at it and try to see, because this is our report as the annual report work group, as well as HITECH. And so while it's done in collaboration, of course, with ASTP, these are topics that we have decided upon. So if we feel that there is something that needs to be modified or changed, this is the last time that we need to do it, because this is moving forward. So let's move to that section so we can see and just remind ourselves a bit about this, because I think that this is very important piece. And I know we've had a lot of different discussions and we have a large amount. So can we go to the next page? And we're going to just go through the next two pages. First, I want to just kind of pause here as well. And this is just what some of the first illustrative story actually shows. And for the ASTP team, I have recommendations to change this picture. I think it would be nice to have a little bit more of a warmer kind of interdisciplinary type picture. So I have some thoughts about changing this picture. I want to put that out there right now, just because this seems a little bit sterile, and it almost makes an image of that it's only physicians, all at computers, and it doesn't seem as patient-centered as what we're trying to do as well. But this is the new story that emerged out for the AI. And I don't know if you all have seen this, but we can go through it. I'm looking at time. We can go through this, but I do want to get to the patient aspects of AI in the rest of the report. And so just very quickly, I'm not going to read it word for word, but a network of rural FQHCs all use the same electronic health record system. They designed their electronic record system to incorporate best practices to collect and analyze their patients' demographics, medical conditions, and health-related social needs. They also invested in new data dashboards and analytic tools to identify and address inequities in clinical care and healthcare outcomes among their patient groups. The EHR design allows the FQHCs to enhance their support of individuals and subpopulations most in need of targeted medical or social help. Building on the data infrastructure and patients' insight, the FQHC network can assess AI clinical tools more effectively to discern which solutions are matched best to their patients and clinicians. In particular, the FQs desire a new AI clinical decision support tool to identify worsening heart failure, to enable quick access, early intervention, and potential referral to the regional cardiac specialty center. They select a tool that is transparent and include health equity principles in the design, such as incorporating data from historically marginalized populations that are similar to those served by the FQ network. They deploy the tool with staff training to appropriately assess for and mitigate potential bias. They also implement analytics to monitor for standardized tool use and equitable outcomes across the diverse populations. The new AI tool FQ network processes demonstrate successful application across all populations. The use of the AI tool leads to improved early heart failure interventions and an increase in specialty referrals, especially among patients of underrepresented ethno-racial groups, patients with limited English proficiency, and patients living with disabilities. The FQHC network submits its findings and data to the developers who enhance their model and transparency documentation. So that was just the first story that is introducing the aspiration and the potential for AI across various different populations. Just want to see if there's any thoughts about that. Yes, Ike.
Can we insert a paragraph or a sentence that's using less complex terminology that puts patients again in the center? And patients are our focus here, but from a patient engagement, patient impact side of it, is there a way of modifying the text in that space?
Yes, you're thinking about in terms of the readability level?
Both from a readability and from an engagement perspective, in terms of from a patient perspective, how does this thing benefit
help them?
Right.
Absolutely. So maybe something along the lines of, for instance, these tools also provide patient education and engagement opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, I thoroughly recognize that the benefit of this thing is the patient. I'm not discounting that, but clearly communicating in it, how, you know, from the patient perspective, how does it benefit them, right? In other words, a statement, hey, by using this tool, doctors will be able to deliver more care more efficiently to patients and reduce duplicative testing, et cetera, you know, make the patient's life easier, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great comment. So yes, I think there may be something, in the outcomes of that, that's down here that can actually demonstrate because of the improved interventions. Thank you for that recommendation.
Like something, I mean, since we're going with the FQHC care setting, I mean, one of the things that's happening is those who can afford to spend $20 a month for a ChatGPT-4 subscription have access to it. People who can't afford that don't have access to it. There are other tools that are out there, but we could put sort of a future case scenario where the FQHC has an institutional subscription to one of these LLMs that's, you know, has whatever appropriate restriction in terms of making sure the data is valid, but or that it's coming from valid sources as opposed to, you know, snake oil salesman or whatever, where the patient would be able to query the LLM ahead of their doctor's appointment, inform their, you know, further refine their questions and understand their symptoms and issues and have a better important discussion with their physician.
Got it, absolutely. And somehow thinking of how to add that, those are all great points. I do caution us though, while we see the future of LLMs, I agree with some of the other comments and that have been stated. We still have a large amount of work to do on them, but this is aspirational, and thinking about how we can do so. That's also a really great point and potential to add. Thank you so much, Anna. Hans?
Thank you, Madal. Yeah, a comment that I have is really related to the references to the EHRs. And I did not catch that earlier, but as this is aspirational, it is attempting to identify where we can be. It seems to focus more on that you can do it with the same EHRs across all the institutions, supposedly then potentially not when you use different EHRs. And there are actually ways to do it either way, is that pros and cons, all kinds of things around it. So I'm wondering whether there's any opportunity to not lead the reader to the conclusion that the only way you can apply AI and achieve these manners are using the same EHR, because we have many, many configurations across the board where it's done across diverse EHRs. It's done in a variety of different ways. So trying to see is that I was doing a little bit of a potential markup to say to change the same to different EHRs and then adjust the analytics to have that they have analytics tools that cut across all the EHRs. But that might imply then perhaps to some that you can only do it with different EHRs. So I'm trying to figure out how to state that, because this is a universal capability that a variety of different ways to achieve that.
That is a really great point, because we really do want to have that full interoperability, and that is agnostic to any of the EHRs. And as you mentioned, yes, we have that. In the FQ setting and in more resource limited settings, it's a little more challenging until they fully get onto some of the various different platforms. But I love the idea of where that's going in the future. So would love your thoughts about how that can actually be revised in order to demonstrate where we should be, especially when it comes to our FQHCs. Thank you for that, Hans. All right, Anna, I see your hand again, and then we're gonna move on to the next, because we have five more target areas to get through.
Okay, I'll be quick. One other additional thing that could be interesting to add into this, just to sort of meld some of our topic areas together, is the incorporation of patient-generated health data into the EHR, and to be able to have AI that operates based off of both home-based data or home-collected data, sensor-based data, as well as EHR data and patient-reported outcomes, because that, I have serious concerns about what on earth AI is going to produce based off of EHR data, just because I feel like a lot of those data points are kind of crude, or very blunt, I would say, when we have, at least in the case of diabetes and high blood pressure, our blood pressure monitoring, among other things, we have sensor-based, home-based data collection methods that would be far more granular and more lend themselves to much better algorithmic data input and output.
Yes. Yeah, and that's, and especially when I think your idea is very well taken, because especially with things such as conditions such as heart failure, there is a large amount of remote monitoring that can be deployed, and patient-generated health data that could be used. So that's a great suggestion. Thank you so much. I know the team's capturing everyone's ideas. All right, so we're going to move on to the next topic or the next page, because I want to make sure we get through this report. So this is the standard crosswalk that we've had. And you'll see that also at the very top, we have the immediate opportunities, in which we actually did categorize the vast majority of these topics into immediate. And then we do have a few that are longer term, which means year 2025 on. And so this is just the same information that we've seen over the past several weeks to months. Next page. And this is the area, just again, want to make sure that we're clear on provider use of AI. This is the same information, and the impact on patients, this is also the same information. However, given the comments from both Ike and Anna, if there's thinking about how we can be more patient-centered, that's why I wanted us to take a look at what the gaps were and the key challenges and opportunities that we had discussed. And then, is there a better framing of that topic name based off of what we as a work group worked on for this topic? So once again, we identified that the key gaps were AI data models used for algorithms and predictive analytics may not be representative of diverse populations, nor of high quality data, raising the risk of harm to patients. So that was the primary key gap that we were addressing, with the key opportunities of assuring the quality, relevance, safety, and usability of AI data models and algorithms. For example, AI training models could be flagged in health IT systems to indicate that a model trained on adults only should not be used for a pediatric patient. So So that's what this topic is focused on right now, is specifically looking at those AI data models and clinical algorithms that are used for the delivery of clinical care. And so while we absolutely don't have time to add on more, just because we are literally in the final stretch of this report, is there something that we do want to do in terms of rephrasing the topic name so it's a little bit more patient-centered based off of the topics that we have lined out here? And again, if we don't know for sure yet, we need some more time to think through this, because I think even just changing things like patient, or there may be some other just changes to this. What I can say is that we can absolutely put, you all can provide your revisions and recommendations, and the team can work on trying to make sure that the language aligns also with our intentions as much as possible. Ike, I see your hand.
It's brainstorming patient involvement in the use of AI in health and healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to come up with a shorthand way of getting to the bi-directional concepts that we're really talking about.
Yeah.
AI that empowers patients. Of course, yeah. Self-care and integration of clinical care. Mm-hmm.
And let's capture those. But what I do urge everyone to do is read through the key gaps, challenges, opportunities, and recommended high-tech activities. Because my only concern, and I'll mention this, is that a lot of what we have discussed so far and that we moved forward so far, even through the larger high-tech committee, really is focusing more on the data models and the clinical algorithms. And we did not, which I think is an opportunity, we did not emphasize the bidirectionality and really kind of the patient perspective and voice of the use of AI. So let's capture what the two of you said, but I want us to think a little bit more, and I just urge us to take a look at this in its entirety, to try to figure out how we stay true to what the annual report work group already decided upon and the high tech committee already kind of moved forward, but how we bring in that thread that this is also, that technology should not just be done to patients, right? It should be a partnership as well.
Michelle, I don't want to divert for too long, but I do remember that we had, and I don't remember if it was the annual report work group or other places in high tech, but talking about looking, and it was actually, I think, in the context of interoperability standards, mm-hmm. was looking at patients being informed of what AI models were in use and the factors being used in any of those models as they applied to the patient. Mm-hmm. The patient was in a position to evaluate whether the model was actually applicable to their situation.
Agreed.
Yes. I'm loving that HDI one work groups. That might be what you're thinking of, Ike. I don't know. But I think what you say, Medell, is a fair point. What would be the best way to review this and to provide comments?
Yes. And all of the materials were sent to the entire work group. So anybody, and I definitely highly recommend to provide the comments and the revisions specifically to this topic. And I'll take a deeper look at it as well. I just know that we have so many other, we're only on one of six, so we got to move.
Right.
And so really, really highly recommend we all take a look at this and try to see what additional revisions we can provide.
Got it.
Great. Thank you all so much. All right, Excel, let's move on to the next target area. So this next one is design and use of technologies that advance health equity. This is really, now that we took out the AI portion, that was really focused on representation in our clinical algorithms and clinical decision support tools, and ensuring that we have safety and ethical uses and equitable uses of our AI. This is the remaining topic, which is really focused on ASTP's efforts in terms of health equity by design. And so we'll go on to the next piece. And this is the story that was advanced. And this was a combination of some of various different aspects of what many actually recommended. And due to time, I just want to make sure that we get through everything, because we only have a few more, about 40 minutes left. But I'm going to do this really quickly, the illustrative story, so that everyone can think about how our topics go directly into these stories. So this is recommend high-tech activities can advance. And so it says a regional health network is looking to adopt a new health IT system utilizing informational resources from ASTP. The health network evaluates how to implement health equity principles in the design of the health IT system. Searching the ASTP ONC certified health IT product list, the network identifies a certified health IT module that supports health equity data standards and the capability to display information in multiple languages. The area the network serves has high rates of pediatric asthma due to environmental factors such as high rates of emissions from factories and older multifamily dwellings, leading to high usage of emergency department services. After implementing the new health IT module, the network is better able to collect social drivers of health information and identify pediatric patients with asthma during routine visits. For patients who show up at the ED, clinicians record the asthma diagnosis, treatment, and SDOH information using standardized diagnosis codes. Pediatric patients with an ED visit for asthma and relevant social risk codes are added to a list of health network community health workers who conduct outreach to ensure that the patients can access medication specialists and air purifiers, and can address social needs like transportation. The network additionally uses demographic data elements and clinical and social risk outcomes data to monitor equitable population performance. 6 months after implementing the health IT module, the health network is better able to reduce inequities for its pediatric patients with asthma and monitor their outcomes. Any thoughts on the story? Okay, not seeing any hands. So it sounds like we're all in a group. Yes, Rochelle.
I don't know if you can just add one word, proximity to transportation infrastructure, and that is often a driver in asthma in your population because they're close to environmental toxins there. I don't know if you're able to do that. If not, I'm fine with it.
Rochelle, I'm sorry, you were breaking up. You said proximity to
highways or transportation zones, because the emissions from cars often are dragged into air conditioning vents and stuff, and that's what drives a lot of the asthma in other populations because they're responsible to highways or infrastructure.
Yes, absolutely. Completely hear you and agree. And so there already in the story, it says high rates of emissions from factories. But I think that adding high rates of emissions from factories and freeways is key, because 100%. That's why we know that all of these different carbon and toxic emissions from all of these fuel-based entities are significant drivers, especially in urban areas. So thank you for that recommendation. And then maybe we can kind of, we may be able to figure out, just so it's not too wordy, we can figure out a way to sort of refine that sentence. Thank you, Rochelle. Any other comments or additions? Okay, all right. And so let's move on to the next. And once again, Michelle, I think taking a look, the images are lovely, but I think maybe if we take a look at some of the images as well, and this is actually kind of going back to patient-centeredness is also, while we have a lot of clinicians inside the images, it may be nice to even just show families or something along those lines, just to just try to show like where we're trying, aspirational, trying to get people like both individuals and families to their highest level of health. So here's the topic here for implementing health equity by design. And so this is the standard crosswalk that we had before. Again, previously we had two, but now we moved that second topic into the AI new target area. So nothing has changed here. And this is really amplifying all of our various different work in terms of supporting ASTP with their mission to really continue to build out health equity by design across the nation and all of our health IT infrastructures and programs and policies. All right, we'll keep on going to the third target area, which is use of technologies that support public health. There's one primary topic, which is optimizing public health data exchange and infrastructure. This is the intro here. Please, please, please take a look at this, read it, revise it, add any additions. But we're going to go on to the illustrative. I say illustrative and sometimes illustrative. It's like tomato and tomato. But we'll go in here. Great. And so the next piece here is the story of what we're trying to push forward in terms of the use of technologies that support public health. I'll read this very quickly as well to get everyone's thoughts. Marianne and her young children make brunch together using organic ingredients, but they feel unwell the next day with abdominal pain, vomiting, and diarrhea. Concerned about their symptoms, the family visits a nearby urgent care clinic, which orders laboratory tests. During their care, the TEFCA and the North Star architecture enable seamless data exchange across providers, ensuring that each family member's health information is updated in real time. These updates inform their immediate care and contribute to a larger data set that can be used for public health monitoring and future care decisions. Meanwhile, unknown to Maria, 64 people visiting three different hospitals and two urgent care clinics in her town have also complained about abdominal pain and gastrointestinal issues within the past 3 weeks. Each hospital and clinic participates in the state syndromic, a surveillance program which notifies the state's public health epidemiologist about the large number of similar cases. Laboratory tests gathered from several providers confirm that there are cases of salmonella infection. An outbreak team is established by the state public health authority. The team works with staff from the hospitals and clinics, including those who support their health IT systems, to reach each person and ask them about what and where they had eaten, as well as where they purchased groceries before getting sick. The team analyzes the data using geographic information systems, GIS technology, and identify eggs from a local farm stand as a likely source. Inspectors visit the farm stand to collect samples. Tests confirm that salmonella is present at the farm stand and in the chicken coop on the property. Maria is contacted by the outbreak team and informed of their findings. She takes additional steps to implement stricter food safety measures at home. That is our public health story. So that was a combination, I believe, of several different stories as well. So any comments or thoughts about this story? And Ike, we took many of your elements, I believe. And so I want to make sure some of your thoughts on this. Yes, Ike.
It looks really good. I got a couple of really minor tweaks. I can submit a writing, just change it from, you know, the state's public health epidemiologist to something along the lines, but many states have more than one public health epidemiologist. And then looking at the follow on here, it might be, you know, public health also provides information about what she can do to for better food safety going forward.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for the idea of this story as well. Great. Any other comments on the public health story? Okay. All right, let's keep on going through. So we're going next to the crosswalk here. And this is the crosswalk, what we have taken a look at. Nothing has been changed at all with this crosswalk, with the topic. And this is an immediate opportunity for this upcoming year as well. Okay, let's keep on going to the fourth target area. Now we're getting into interoperability. And this was one of the areas that was We had several more topics, which is interesting because in past annual reports, we've had a few less topics. So it just shows that we have ebbs and flows. And while we have some topics that are highly complex, and which there may only be one or two topics, then we have other areas such as interoperability, where they all kind of mingle together to create a much larger kind of recommendation. So this is showing all 7 topics underneath interoperability, including some of the most recent ones, further improvement of data quality and sharing, supporting data standards of maternal health, and supporting data standards for diverse abilities. So let's go to the story so we can show how all of these 7 topics were kind of intermingled in the story. So this is a story of interoperability, and it says an 82-year-old woman falls in her assisted living community and breaks her hip. She is transferred to the hospital for surgery. The hospital recently adopted a certified health IT module that supports bidirectional exchange with other providers, enabling the patient's care team to easily access her health records, lab tests, medications, and care summaries from her primary care provider and the assisted living community. Even though he is over 1,000 miles away, her son is a caregiver for her with permission to access her medical record. After she is discharged from the hospital, the assisted living community's physical therapist starts rehabilitation and implements a care plan with her orthopedist input. Due to the improvement of image standards and exchange, the pre- and post-operative radiological images are available to the physical therapist and her primary care provider. The assisted living community shares timely progress reports with her orthopedist and PCP through their on-site resident information system, so the recovery data is available for follow-up appointments. The son can monitor his mother's progress through automated feeds to an app on his phone that informs him that she has been attending all her appointments and offers timely updates about her medical status. The assisted living community system also tracks her nutrition and activity, allowing her son to know that she is active, eating healthy, and being monitored for additional fall risk. All right. Thoughts about the interoperability story? Yes, Ike.
Very quickly, can we modify the story so that the son, it's clear that the son has permission to receive information about his mother's health status? And on the previous slide, can we include patient access to data as also being an interoperability challenge? It's not just in the provider environment.
Yes, let's take each one at a time. So in the last sentence of the first paragraph, it says her son is a caregiver for her with permission to access. Yes. Yeah. But that's a really good point. We wanted to make sure in terms of consent for sure. And then
it might be good to move that to the first part of that sentence so that other people don't make the same mistake I did.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. So just rearranging that sentence. So maybe even saying, maybe we can put the distance at the very end. So her son is a caregiver for her with permission. However, he lives 1,000 miles away.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yep. So that's very clear. Okay, great. And then your second comment you were saying in terms of.
Right. If you look at data exchange amongst healthcare providers, patients, and other groups has been challenging. Mm-hmm. Also, patient access to their data has been challenging.
Got it. So adding patient into that area of the intro.
But it may not be, right? It may not be exchange, but it may be access.
Mm-hmm. Great.
It can be exchange
because right now there really isn't much opportunity for patients to contribute data to their EHR. That's a related issue. But I don't want to make it overly complex.
Great. Thank you, Ike. Thank you for that. Yes, Anna.
Sorry. I think I concur with Ike's perspective, but I do think, I mean, like some of the comments I submitted to for the HGI2 thing, my personal comments were like, we need to be able to have patient mediated image exchange so that, I mean, if you go to an eye doctor, an ophthalmologist, and they get imaging done, but you want to get another ophthalmologist to look at it because you're not sure that what you're getting from the first ophthalmologist is mm-hmm. the right thing. it's kind of awkward to go to the doctor and say, hey, can you make sure that this other doctor who's your competitor down the street can also see it? So I, as a patient, should be able to direct access, you know, on the HDI2 stuff, they're proposing leak-based, which I think is great, but it shouldn't, it's the kind of thing where patients should be the mediator or a mediator who can access the image, not the physician.
No, completely agree with you in every way. So you will remember we do have a target area for patient access. And so when we get to that one, let's see if it encompasses what you all are referring to, because I think with the target areas, it's been historically just trying to put things in various different categories, not saying that one is not as important as the other, but they all have their sort of place. But let's see, once we get to that patient area, if we also feel like we need to come back to the interoperability to add something here into the interoperability section as well. I think historically the interoperability, which whether right or wrong, has been sort of interoperability between, for instance, clinical settings, public health settings, tribal settings, et cetera. So more of the public health and clinical delivery system, while the patient access has also been kind of dovetailing off of that, but really fully focused on the patient and trying to reduce that burden. So let's see when we get there. And if we feel like we need to come back to this interoperability and add some items, let's definitely discuss that as well.
Okay.
Great. And so we'll put a pin in that, but don't forget. All right. So let's go directly to, let's continue going on to, we went through the story. So the story looks good. And then these are all of the various different topics. And the topics aren't, these are all, this is the standard crosswalk that we've all looked at numerous times and reviewed. And let's continue going on to the next page. And these are the immediate opportunities. More immediate opportunities, because we felt that everything in terms of this target area is immediate, which it is. And then there's a next page for it. And then here were some of the longer term opportunities. And that was really with pharmacies, because we felt like there needed to be some fundamental blocks laid before we could actually provide that full recommendation for interoperability along with pharmaceutical data. Okay. Let's go on to the next target area. So this target area is privacy and security. And this is, love how the color is red, Michelle, by the way. So there are three top target areas or topics in this target area: privacy of sensitive health data, lack of disclosure, accountability, transparency, and use of de-identified data. This is the intro. Please, please, please take a look at the intro. Let's make sure all the introductions really do comprise all of the details and the sentiments that we would like. So your feedback is so incredibly important. Yes, Hans.
On that topic, I'm going to be providing a couple of edit suggestions that make a clarify the distinction between the discrete sensitive data and the ability to recognize discrete data inside documents, narratives, free text, things like that, data sets, because it is at times unclear when we talk about that, that we actually need to address both sets of data, and that we need to be able to manage a document that contains sensitive data as easily as recognizing the discrete data itself, as it will be exchanged and shared in both ways. We are not only exchanging documents, but we're also exchanging discrete data, and we need to catch them all and decide according to the rules which ones we can share or not. So there's a couple of edits that that I will provide on clarifying that distinction and complete the scope.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Hans. We greatly appreciate those additions to this and really important pieces and points. Great. Any other comments here before we go on to the story? Okay. Excel, let's go on to the next slide. So this is the story that is supporting privacy and security. So a patient with hypertension, bunions, depression, and opioid use disorder is seen by a PCP and psychiatrist at Good Health System and a podiatrist at Neighborhood Health System. He is concerned about his privacy and wishes not to disclose information about his depression or opioid use disorder to his podiatrist. Good Health Systems recently implemented a new patient portal feature that allows the patient to interact with a consent management tool to request restrictions on disclosures under HIPAA. The patient logs into the portal and is provided information consent at a sixth grade reading level regarding the risks and benefits of restricting certain data from being shared among his providers. After reviewing the information, he decides to request a restriction on the disclosure of his depression and opioid use disorder diagnoses to the podiatrist. Good Health System reviews the request and grants it. The Health IT system tags structured and unstructured data according to nationally developed Value Set Authority Center terminology standards for different types of sensitive data as defined by federal and state law. Depending on the requesting provider, the tagged data may or may not be shared in accordance with the patient's consent directives. This capability is developed through a public-private partnership between the federal government, healthcare industry, medical providers, and patient advocates to simplify the data segmentation and consent management process. So that is our story that focuses on privacy and security. And Hannah, thank you so much for all of your great contributions to this story. So any thoughts or any additional thoughts about this story, additions to the story? Great. Everyone seems satisfied with the story. And and the lock picture. Thanks, Michelle. All right. Well, then let's keep on going through. We are in our last target area, and then we can have a little bit more discussion. Here's the crosswalk for privacy of sensitive data. And then this is the immediate opportunity that we defined. Let's keep on going to the next page. And these are the additional two longer-term opportunities of lack of disclosure, accountability, and transparency in the use of de-identified data. Great. Let's go on to the next page. And the last but definitely not least topic is patient access to information, where we have two topics, patient-generated health data, as well as reducing patient burden. And so once again, here is the introduction, really asking everyone to read through the introduction, make sure that it aligns with what we want to convey regarding this target area and what some of the various different opportunities are as well. And we'll move directly on into the story aspect. And so this is a story to support patient access to information. So I'll read it as well. A Japanese-speaking woman sees multiple healthcare providers across different networks for several health conditions. Before her primary care doctor implemented new patient portal software, she would spend an inordinate amount of time requesting her records from the various specialists. As a result of the new patient portal functionality and the TEFCA, she can consolidate her health information from multiple providers across several health networks and platforms into a single dashboard and spend less time coordinating her care. By incorporating health equity into the design of the health IT systems, developers implement features such as support for multiple languages, instructions in plain language written at a sixth grade reading level, and both digital and health tutorials. Since her doctor has a small population of Japanese-speaking patients, he is now able to update the portal with a module in Japanese. A tutorial built into the EHR allows the patient to learn about the portal and its functionality in her preferred language. The online tutorial also enables her to increase her digital literacy and learn more about her health issues at times that are convenient for her without needing to find childcare or taking time away from her job. Okay. That is the story. And any thoughts? Ike, I see your hand.
Yeah. It's a, you know, it's part of this talk about patient access information, but the modules include patient generated health data. The user story doesn't include anything about passing data the other direction. A big feature that, you know, I'm not interested as a patient in having to use my PCP portal. I want to use whatever portal
I want to use to access my data. Looking at a provider getting a new EHR doesn't mean that they're receiving data or they're performing as an individual access service provider to get any of my health data from any other providers in the first place. So that's another gap kind of missing in this space, because there are three challenges that we need to address.
Great, thank you. And so I just want to, you were breaking up just a slight bit at the very beginning, but what I gathered, and please fill in the gaps, I gathered number one, this does not include any patient generated health data. Number two, it's discussing using the patient portal, but as a patient, you may not want to use your patient portal. You may want to use your own technology, but everything flows into your own platform that you feel most comfortable with. And then the third one, I'm sorry, I missed the third one.
The third part is that just because a provider has a new EHR doesn't mean that they are engaged as an individual access service provider in terms of getting any of my health data from any other healthcare provider.
Got it. Yes. And so even though that patient portal is there, yes, that doesn't mean they're actively bringing information in. Thank you. I thank you for that. And so we'll see if there's some way that the team can take a look at the story and see how to incorporate some of those important elements.
Yes. I really do think that it's important for patients to have a choice about what technology they want to use to aggregate their data and make their data available to whom they want. And that's often not necessarily easily done if you're using a particular provider's portal. You can't generally then say, oh, I want this other healthcare provider to have all my data in that portal.
Yeah, very good points. Very similar to what Anna was mentioning. And Anna, I see your hand, but I'm going to go to Hans first, and then we'll go to you, Anna, as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree and support the intent of Steve's comments. Just a clarification, Madel, I like the way you phrased it, that they had, the patient has a choice of their platforms. To clarify is that typically a provider only has one portal that may or may not be part of the same EHR. It might be another one. It can be any kind of combination. But the choice is not that the patient can choose their own portal. It's more that they can choose their own apps that they interact with. So I think we the terminology of a choice of platform makes it a little bit neutral, because I don't think we can set an expectation that a provider is going to have multiple different portals plugged in to their environment. It's their portal, but there are other technologies that can be used to share data with the patients in whatever format they want to.
Yes, absolutely agree with that as well. So really agree with both what you and I am mentioning. And Anna, I know you're going to bring it home as well.
Oh, Madel, you're so kind. I feel like the case study that I submitted kind of got to Ike's points more directly than this. And I understand that there's it looks like the team has attempted to meld the original case sort of use case with the stuff that I did, which is great. I like the language part too, which I did not include, but the way that I meant to write it, perhaps I didn't articulate it particularly well, is that the patient had a PHR that pulled all of the data from all of the sources into one thing so that she could use it and access it when and where she wanted without having to go into the portals. You can kind of read what the team has got here to maybe mean that, but I don't think it's as clear as it could be. And again, maybe I just didn't articulate it particularly well in what I sent through, but that's, I think what I intended to write would have incorporated all the stuff that I could mention.
No, that's great, Anna. And thank you so much for submitting those various different ideas for the story. And I think that exactly what you're saying and what others are saying, the vision is that patients don't have to rely on these EHR patient portals, but they have their own technology that is able to access and bring in information from across all of their various different providers and patient-generated health data. So I think that this story, from what the three of you all have mentioned, and also Anna, what you submitted, maybe this story can just be revised a bit more to have that additional step of that autonomy and that full, I guess, ownership over the data, as well as pulling in, that it also allows for PGHD to also flow into that as well. So thank you so much, Michelle and team. Like, if we're able to add in some of those different comments, then that should meet all of the various different thoughts about patient access to information and the future of patient access to information. Great. Any other thoughts or comments about this one?
Michelle, real fast, it might be useful to talk about, you know, building on the foundation of Blue Button and other technologies. That's the be all end all, but at least indicating that there's been previous work done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great suggestion. Thank you so much, Ike. Great suggestion. All right. Well, that was the last story for our six target areas. So let's go directly to the crosswalk.
What about the patient-generated health data one?
So this was patient access. So there's one story for each one of the target areas. So the topics are right here where we have the reducing patient burden. And then I believe if we go to the next slide, is the patient-generated health data. So that's why the idea is to, for that story, that we incorporate the PGHD into that story. So that is reflective of the two topics that the report is discussing underneath the target area of patient access to information.
And this, I guess, with patient-generated data, the category label patient access to information really isn't reflective of that as a function, because we've introduced bi-directional exchange here.
Yes. And you're saying that is, are you, so let me make sure that I fully understand, Ike. Are you asking if patient-generated health data should be underneath patient access to information or underneath a different target area? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, or change the target area. I mean, in the context of interoperability, patient-generated health data would seem to be a natural in that space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Under the category patient access, patient-generated is about providing information a little more so than accessing information.
Right. Yeah. So you bring up a really important point, and I know that patient-generated health data has been underneath patient access to information underneath this target area for many, many years. That does not mean that it necessarily is the right location for it to be. But one of the things that I think is really important, and just because we are where we are right now, at the final course of this, to put this in the parking lot for us to relook at this for next upcoming annual report, because your point is very valid. It's, if it's patient-generated health data, patients don't need to have access to their own patient-generated health data. They already have access to it. But it's really, we've been discussing, and even if you look here, we have been discussing more interoperability when it comes to really incorporating PGHD into all of our other health IT systems. So I think your point is very, very well taken. I'm pausing because I'm not quite sure how ASTP wants to handle thinking about moving this topic out of this target area into another at this stage, but I absolutely do feel that we need to discuss that for our upcoming annual report on where is the best place for PGHD, and how also, because we know PGHD has been on our list and it has been in the annual report for at least three reports, how do we ensure that we're making the right amount of progress in this space as well?
I would argue that you could incorporate it into each of the areas in one way or another. because it, I mean, you could make the case that patients have access to this information. And I think maybe, I mean, you can make a case that patient access to information, you know, in this case, the patients have access to it and the physicians and the healthcare system do not. So I think you could torture it enough to make it work in this category. But I think I could point is valid, but perhaps PGHD should just be integrated in different ways into the sections on interoperability and public health, because like temperature data could be super helpful for public health. And we saw that some in the pandemic. I mean, not to mention—
yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, we might be able to address some of it by going back to the interoperability tab and saying, see also patient access to information, as there may be a tie or a particularly strong tie between those two groupings, and that might help address a number of issues.
Yes, thank you. Thank you all for those ideas. It's really important. So really something for us to think about what we need to do with PGHD and where best it needs to be situated in the annual report and in terms of our work as well, because it's very important, as we all know. Excellent.
Okay. I would definitely like to see it called out more. And if there's only one, if there's not a case study specifically or use case specifically looking at PGHD, then I would like to see that called out a bit more in the patient access to information use case.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that that's a relatively important and straightforward addition to add. Great. All right. So this is the last topic underneath patient access to information. And let's keep on going through the report. And Seth, please let me know when it's time for public comment. And so this actually, this is the high-tech progress in fiscal year 2024. It goes over all of our various different high-tech accomplishments, as well as the different subcommittees that engage and also provide recommendations during the year. Next slide. This is we as the annual report work group, what our accomplishments have been over the past several years and what our overall charges, which is also just a great reminder of why we're all here as the annual report work group and what our products, where they tend to go and how they do make an impact. Next slide. This is a bit from HTI2 of what we did. So as you can see, it's just breaking down all of the various different accomplishments. Next slide. And the charges. And as well as our interoperability standards work group that convened at the early portion of this year. Next slide. And then Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force of 2023. This was a little bit of an overlap into 2024, so that's why that is there. Next slide. And then we have the appendix. And the appendix, if we can just click through these pretty quickly. And I think that is where we are. And ask some other items. Yep, you can keep on going, Excel, because I know we're at public comment. And this is the last bit, just acknowledgments, in which we'll do some modifications there. So that is the report. So. Please provide your comments, and then Seth, I'll turn it on over to you for public comment.
All right, thank you so much, Bridell. So we're going to open up the meeting for public comment. If you are on the Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located in the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are participating by phone only today, you can press *9 to raise your hand. And then once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your lines. And so a couple updates while we give folks an opportunity to raise their hand. One is that the final annual report work group meeting will be held for the fiscal 2024 cycle, that is. It's scheduled for October 29th from 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. And also just wanted to highlight for the annual report work group members, this was included in the materials that were distributed today's call, but we're asking if you could provide any written feedback on the draft report by close of business Tuesday, October 8th, to the HITAC email address. With that, I will look. I'll see no comments on the phone at this time, and I see no hands raised. So, Madel, I will send it back to you to close us out.
Thank you so much, Seth. And again, thank you to the work group for all of your perspectives and insights. I was just informed that if anyone has any additional comments, revisions, recommendations, that the ASTP team needs them by end of day tomorrow, which is Tuesday. So again, if you have any revisions, comments, or additions, please take a look at all of these materials and please do your best to submit them by the end of the day tomorrow, which is Tuesday, October 8th. And that will allow the team to incorporate the comments, make the revisions, because they have to get all of the materials out to the full HITECH committee before the end of this week. And so once again, thank you so much. Really do appreciate all of the thought, all of the revisions, and look forward to seeing all of you all in Washington, D.C. next Wednesday and Thursday. So have a great day, everyone.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.